We live in a world that we have to find a way to collaborate and be generous, because all of the data out there shows when we do that, we do better. And when we don't do that, we do worse.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Helping with Dr. Richard Schuster. Food for the brain, knowledge from the experts, tools to win at life. I'm your host, Dr. Richard. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, and whatever you do, this is the show that is going to help you become the best version of yourself. Each episode, you will hear from some of the most amazing, talented, and successful people on the planet who followed their passions and strive to help others. Join our movement to get 1 million people each day to commit acts of kindness for others. Together, we're going to make the world a better place. Are you ready? Because it's time for your Daily Helping. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Daily Helping Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard, and our guest today is awesome. And he's been here before. He's a friend of the show. If you haven't heard of Mark Munchak, What's Wrong With You? Go check out episode 196, where we had our first talk. I'm just kidding. There's nothing wrong with you. But Mark Munchak is the founder and chief opportunity officer of the Opportunity Lab, a strategy consulting firm focused on conscious growth. Mark has worked with leaders from Google, Apple, JP Morgan Chase, General Electric, Goldman Sachs, Adorama, TerraCycle, Feltzberg, the New York Times, Wharton School of Business, New York University, Columbia University, NBC, Time Warner, and the United Nations, to name a few. He's the author of the best-selling book, Culture of Opportunity, How to Grow Your Business in an Age of Disruption, which came out in 2017. He's been featured in Real Leaders, The Better Business Book, The Organization Development Review Journal, Lifetime Network, WPLJ, WCBS, Newsday, Working Women Magazine, and the San Francisco Chronicle. He's here today to talk to us about his newest book, Opportunity Intelligence, How to Thrive in an Age of Radical Disruption. Mark, I just said a lot, no pressure. Welcome back to the Daily Helping. It is great to have you with us.
Thank you, Dr. Richard. When people ask me, what do? I don't tell them all of that biography, which is nice and I appreciate it. I feel good about it. I just say I am a grandfather of two. I have a 5-year-old granddaughter and I have an almost 3-year-old granddaughter. And my mission is to make a better world for them as they grow up. So I grew up myself at the intersection of business, art, and psychology. So everybody in my family, Dr. Richard, was a member of the family business, except my parents. My father was a psychiatrist. My mother was an activist, artist, entrepreneur. So I didn't know anybody who actually had a job, meaning a job working for somebody else. And the reason why the book, Opportunity Intelligence, How to Thrive in an Age of Radical Disruption, is so important to me is that my parents went through the 1918 flu, what used to be called the Spanish flu, where 100 million people died. They went through the Holocaust. They went through the McCarthy period. They went through the civil rights movement. They went through radical, radical disruption. And the one thing I learned from them is they got to the point where they accepted whatever was there and decided, what can I do about it? And how do I make it something that will be good for me, my children, and my community, which is not an easy thing to do because a lot of times disruptions are immediately not very good for, you know, the people that are disrupted. And in our earlier conversation before we went on the air, I was so enthusiastic about your program because we have so many first responders and people in the military, people who work in medical care and healthcare who are in crisis. And I want to make sure we help them and support them by giving them the tools to be able to understand what happened to them is something that they need to process and they need to support to do that. And that's sort of, you do it on one end, I do it on the other end, but it's important work that we need to do.
Thank you for that. And it is important work, and we are both hitting it from different ways. I'm so curious about this book because I know your first book came out pre-COVID. It was written for a world that is very different than it is today in so many ways. But this book, in an Age of Radical Disruption, what was the light bulb that went off? What was the moment to where you said to yourself, I need to write this book?
That's a great question. You know, I had always intended to write a follow-up book because I got so many questions and so many, I love the book. However, it didn't address this issue and it didn't address that issue. And I want you to speak more about Unlock Your Network and about Success DNA. So for a couple of years, I just struggled because I felt like I didn't have the time to do it. I didn't know how to, I couldn't get my mind around it. And then I brought in a partner, John Natoli, who's my co-author on the book. And I started to share with him over Zoom what were my ideas were. And literally, Dr. Richard, in a day, he came up with a framework for the book and the title using AI and using his brilliant mind together. And I said, oh, now I can write this book with the help of a co-author and with the help of AI. Not AI isn't writing the book, but the research that it did, the conceptual framework, the images that it did, I felt like I have two co-authors, John and different forms of AI. So it was more about my mindset being open to the tools that were available and learning about them. And then realizing when I started talking about it, people said, oh, we need this now more than ever.
So you mentioned, and I like this because I've seen, and I'm sure everybody listening to this has seen some pretty sensational things in the news where, you know, AI has absolutely screwed the pooch, right? Like, what was it about a month or two ago? There was a big trial and the attorneys were using AI and AI was just making up court cases, right? Like here with decisions and, you know, so-and-so versus so-and-so 2005, none of it was real. And not to take us too far down this rabbit hole, but I think it's fantastic that you have a co-author with a framework that is using AI as a tool, which is how it should be used, not as the author itself. So I'm curious, the framework, talk to us about what went into the framework and how does that framework look?
So what went into the framework was understanding how I personally and my company, Opportunity Lab, has dealt with the disruptions in my life and in our life as an organization. So the first step was what we call the opportunity mindset, which is looking at an opportunity as a reality, not as something good or bad. I think people struggle with things that are disruptive because they think, oh, that's bad for me, or that's lucky for me, or I wish that didn't happen, or why did it happen to me now? Well, that's just like saying that reality is good or bad. Well, we can't change the reality, but what we can change is our mindset about it and the story we tell about it.
So I like this, and it's deeply rooted in psychology, because one of the things that we know, I've talked about this on a lot of episodes over the years, is the way we perceive things directly impacts how we respond. And even more pronounced than that, if you want to use a mumbo jumbo, we talk about, you know, an internal versus an external locus of control, right? What is happening to me? I can't control it. I can't control the stock market. I can't control COVID. What? Or an internal locus of control, which sounds like where you are and certainly where your family was when you talked about all these things your parents experienced, to say that the world happens, but no matter what happens, I have the tools and the capability to respond in a manner which is adaptive and to demonstrate resiliency and overcome whatever it is. So I love that you're viewing this opportunity mindset as a valence-free framing of whatever is going on in the world. Not positive, not negative. This is the way it is. And then we have to respond.
So yeah, to that point, Dr. Richard, the internal locus of control, which is your consciousness, the story, the narrative you're telling, the way that you are shaping, very much can influence the external of control, the external portion of control. And that people don't realize you have to deal with that first. The internal has to be first before the external can actually be useful to you. So I may have said this on the last episode, but I think it bears repeating. I learned a lot about all of this when my wife and I decided to buy our first home back way, way back in 1981, which was the highest crime year in New York City since they had statistics. So we moved into this house on March 23rd of 1981. On March 28th, somebody tried to burn it down and almost succeeded. And in the subsequent days, vandals came in and stole four hand-carved fireplace mantles. They stole six stained glass windows, my bike, my TV, and my microwave. So we moved back into this house in a very cold and rainy April of 1981 with no heat, no hot water, no windows, no alarm, and no money. That seemed like something happening bad to me. But what I realized was that people, literally, Dr. Richard, they showed up that we were there 6 days, right? So we didn't know anybody. They showed up with food, with advice, with support. People actually moved in and stayed with us for 6 months to help us rebuild this house. And I realized all these resources that I had that I didn't realize because I was open to receiving them. I was grateful and I gave back to them. And I started realizing there is a different world when you think in an abundance mindset, even when you're in a crisis like that.
It's so well said, you know, and it's easier to get caught in this loop, right? This fear and panic. And it's sometimes hard for us to get out of it. But I love stories like that because they show that at our core, we have the potential to be a force for good in our communities and improve people's lives. So I want to jump back to the framework. So the first part of this is this opportunity mindset, having a reality that's neither positive nor negative, just seeing it for what it is. What's the next part of the framework, Mark?
When I was in 10th grade, the only thing I remembered, Dr. Richard, from 10th grade geometry was Archimedes, a Greek mathematician, said, "Give me a lever and a fulcrum and a place to stand, and I can lift the earth." The challenge with that is when you're in crisis, when you're in radical disruption, which we all are in some form or another, finding the place to stand is the most difficult thing. So I realized that in that crisis and all the other crises, when I was able to step back and I was able to use meditation, prayer, exercise, nature, emotional support to step back and look at the world that I was in, I was able to say, all right, where do I put my lever and my fulcrum to actually move forward rather than be set back? So the place to stand, or we call it points of leverage, is the next step in that opportunity mindset process that's in the book, Opportunity Intelligence.
Perfect. So what's the next piece?
So now that I have the place to stand, I'm looking at, okay, where can I put my lever and my fulcrum? Where are the resources that I have? So there's three categories that typically happen when you have a place to stand. There are underutilized resources, internal or external. There are critical obstacles that often we get frustrated and we don't deal with them. We put them aside. And then there are new opportunities that come. So when we do the strategic intuition, which is a guided meditation process that's in the book, we start to see, okay, what are the underutilized resources that I have in my ecosystem, inside or outside my company or me as a person? What are the critical obstacles I have to overcome in order for me to move forward? And are there some new opportunities that might be coming that I want to be open to? That's the next step in the framework.
I like that it's called strategic intuition, right? And if you think about it, those are kind of contradictory terms, right? Like a strategy, like I put a pin on a map and I'm going to navigate to that point on a map, versus intuition is this thing that people understand when you say intuition, but it's often not super scientific. It's, you know, it's your gut instinct, right? And that's hard to measure. So talk to us about how those concepts come together, because at a glance, they seem like they're at odds with each other a bit.
Yeah. So the old idea of strategy was you would have a long-term vision. Then you would set some long-term goals. You would set some shorter-term objectives, and you would move from where you are now to where you want to be. And there was a world for a few decades where you could do that because the world was a whole lot more predictable than it is now. What companies have found, and communities and individuals, is that you cannot predict the future anymore. However, you can be influential, and that's another step, what we call opportunity shaping. If you understand what is happening in any given moment. So intuition, Dr. Richard, is a sense of wisdom. It's tapping into the wisdom that you have. And I think people think, well, it's just this gut feel, and some people have it, some people don't have it. We get millions of bits of data every day, every minute. And within that massive amount of data, there is the signal and there is the noise, right? So the intuition are people's ability to take all that information in and figure out what is the signal that's happening to me now, and how do I make that signal useful to me? So strategic intuition is not really oxymoron. It's really saying that strategy needs to be emergent. It needs to be present in the moment and evolving and changing based on your internal and external state, not based on some goal that you thought you could do, where the conditions are now very different than they were when you set out to have that goal.
And so is the opportunity shaping the next rung on our ladder here?
Yes, the opportunity shaping is the next, is being able to iterate the things that you're seeing, maximizing your resources, and really moving things forward as you're interacting with the world as it comes to you. So to give you an example, as I mentioned back, writing this book, I first was stuck because I had an idea of how it should be. Me writing a book like I did my first book, I couldn't do that because my whole situation had changed. I had a lot more things I was doing. I had a lot more things that were not allowing me to do it by myself. And I realized that a lot of this book is around collaboration, about using your networks. So when John Natoli came to me, I realized this guy is brilliant and we actually are complementary. And when he accessed artificial intelligence for me, I began to see, oh, there are resources that I have that I didn't realize. These are underutilized resources that came to me during my strategic intuition. So the book started out to be one thing where I was stuck and then became something else because I was very open in that opportunity mindset to what was actually happening in the moment.
Hey guys, Dr. Richard here. For the past 7 years, I've been privileged to bring you incredible guests who are changing the world and can help you become the best version of yourself. I'm really excited to share with you a new quiz that I created based on my clinical training that will curate for you a custom list of my top episodes and actionable strategies to help you wherever you are on your journey. All you need to do is go to drrichardschuster.com to take it, and it's 100% free. You'll be taking the next step on the journey to unlocking the power of you, and I can't wait to see where you'll go. Makes total sense. And so we've gone through the four first pillars of this. What's next?
So network sensitivity, you know, cultivating a sensitive network is key. So in the opportunity mindset, we're moving from I to we. We're moving from scarcity to abundance. We're moving from competition to collaboration. So there is an algorithm in LinkedIn. It's not easy to find. It's kind of buried in your profile. It will tell you how many people are 3 degrees of separation from you. So me, I myself have about 3,000 direct connections on LinkedIn. But let's take somebody who has a moderate amount, who's not incredibly connected, but has a network of, let's say, 500 people. 500 people, 3 degrees of separation from that one person reaches several million people. Probably 10 million people. When you realize that, Dr. Richard, that every client, every customer, every partner, every employee, every solution that you need is only 3 degrees of separation from you, you start to realize, okay, there is more resources than I realized, but I have to learn through network sensitivity how to reach them. So the scarcity mindset is, I don't have enough customers, don't have enough money, don't have enough the right people, don't have the right technology. And I'm going to find it out there somewhere. Hopefully I'll get it. I'm going to hire a marketing firm to find unknown people in unknown places. I'm going to try to get them and be more, you know, intentional, et cetera. But actually, all those people are already within your network. So you have to learn through network sensitivity how to connect to them. And if you have the mindset of sharing and abundance and giving back, those resources start to come to you as well as you reaching out to them.
You know, there's been themes that have been popping up as we've been talking, Mark, abundance and giving back. And it's interesting, right? Because so many people in business, and I don't know that this has changed much since COVID, I would have hoped it would, but I think so many people in business still view business as a zero-sum game, that for me to do well, that means my competitors have to do less well, right? And so, but you're talking about a concept that's very different. Like, the, you know, you didn't say this exactly, but I'm pulling from that there's plenty of fish in the ocean. And if we all help each other catch fish, everybody eats.
Yes, exactly.
I'm loving this so far. This framework is awesome. After the network sensitivity piece, what's next?
Basically, it's just continuing to go back through the steps you know, like the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People.
Sharpen the saw. It's the sharpen the saw piece of Stephen Covey.
Yeah, you're going back to the mindset.
Okay.
Because you need to continue to grow. Like my mindset today, I think, is abundant. However, every day I'm finding out there's more abundance out there than I realized. And, you know, we have this habit, as you mentioned a moment earlier, of thinking about people who are not in our company or maybe might be thought of as competitors. And when we have that distrustful mindset, we miss out on opportunities. So I'm continually to learn how to reshape the competitive nature that I had when I was a child. I was an athlete. And when you're an athlete, you know, everything outside of your team is a competitor and your goal is to defeat them. And in some teams, somebody even on your team might be a competitor because you might think, well, I want to be the number three hitter in baseball and I'm better than that person who's in there now. And I'm fighting for recognition or I'm fighting for salary if I'm a professional athlete. We had to change all that. We live in a world that we have to find a way to collaborate and be generous because all of the data out there shows when we do that, we do better. And when we don't do that, we do worse.
What I also, as I'm thinking about this, is this is a framework where people can move up and down this like a ladder as they need to take a step forward, take a step back. Clearly, this would work with teams. This would work with leaders. This would work with employees. This would also work with families.
Yeah.
I love this. So, Mark, I know we've talked a lot about the book and we have a lot of cool things to cram into a short amount of time. I know you've got an event coming up later this year. I wanted to give some space for you to talk about that because I think it's going to be a really cool event. And if people want to get involved in it, I want them to have time to jump in. So share with us about this event that you have coming up.
So last November 2024, I received a message through LinkedIn from my now partner, Tammy Alvarez, who runs a company called Career Winner Circle in Mexico City and in New York. And she said, I want you to be my keynote speaker for this Future of Work conference that we're doing. I read your first book and I like your profile. I think you're the right person. So I said, great. I feel very flattered by that. So we started to have a conversation about this conference. And she was talking about it in a way that was a traditional conference about the future of work. And I said, you know, Tammy, I really want to do something that we're actually living and acting the future of work now. We're actually being collaborative. We're being abundant. We're being network sensitive. We're being all of these things that are in my next forthcoming book. And she said, wow, I never thought about that. I said, I don't want to have keynote speakers. I don't want to have panel discussions. I want to have something that is immersive and I want to make it to be an invitation only where we're bringing people who truly want to reimagine work right now, not a year from now, 5 years from now, but actually believe that better leaders make better companies and make a better world. So literally, Dr. Richard, from November to January, we became partners. I said, I don't want to just be a keynote speaker. I want to co-create this event with you. And just in the course of a few months, we've gotten Neil Sahota, who has 30 patents through IBM. He was on the IBM Watson team. He is the senior AI consultant to the United Nations on ethics. We have Gary Malkin, who is a multiple award-winning Emmy composer and musician, who's going to use music in this event to actually create a very collaborative, generative world. We're doing three what we call playground hackathons, where we're bringing a third of the people together in small group. It's 75 people, invitation only. One will be hacking the pace of change with AI. So I think most people are afraid of AI because they think AI is moving the pace of change too fast. It's moving the pace of change at whatever the pace of change is at the given moment. So we're saying use AI to actually manage that change, to be able to make that change more intentional and work for you rather than be afraid of it and either get overwhelmed by it or try to do something before you know what to do. The second is the leadership reset, is resetting leadership as rather than a top-down, you know, command and control leadership, which is no longer working, to really be a servant leader, a collaborative leader, a leader where you're actually guiding, supporting, and providing resources to people who already have a direction when you have a common goal. The third is thriving cultures by empowering talent. And we've got some extraordinary people who are doing that in a very, very different way. So it's going to be an unconference because it's not going to be keynote speakers telling you what to do. It's going to be people who are reimagining the future in a dialogue and then in three deep dive playground hackathons where they're going to come out with a framework to go back to their team and say, I have a direction I didn't have before. I've got a group of other CEOs and senior leaders I didn't know before. And I've got a group of people from our team who can guide us if needed.
I love this. And for those of you listening, if this is of interest, we'll have a link in the show notes to where you can check out this event and apply to be a participant if this is up your alley. Mark, I know we talked about this a little bit before we hit the record button. You're doing some really cool work up in North Carolina, helping restore what was so damaged after Hurricane Helene. Talk to us a little bit about what you're doing and how people can donate and help with that cause.
Oh, thanks, Dr. Richard. I appreciate you giving me an opportunity for that. I was invited to participate in a summit called Crossroads Collaboratory, Our Earthshot Moment in August of last year, where we brought together climate scientists, we brought together organizational change makers and Native American sustainability leaders to imagine Asheville and Western North Carolina as a climate resilient city, community, and so forth. Well, 6 weeks after that, we had Hurricane Helene, which basically destroyed large segments of Asheville and Western North Carolina. It particularly hurt the River Arts District, which is one of the largest artist communities in the United States. So we decided, my partner Wendy and I, my life partner and colleague, we wanted to focus on the River Arts District and help many of these artists who literally were so depressed because they lost hundreds and hundreds of their paintings or their sculptures or their, you know, crafts, and they lost the physical facilities in which they did their work on, bring them back. So we started with storytelling. We interviewed many, many of the first responders, many of the artists, many of the people who were affected. And then we started to see that there are other community groups here that were also doing something similar. So we joined Blueprint for Impact, which is an organization that's bringing together a lot of other groups. And today, actually this afternoon, we're doing an Unlock Your Network program to bring together funders, thought leaders, community leaders to imagine the resources that we have and how to focus those resources on this particular area, and the River Arts District is one subset of that. So I feel like it's disruption that was, it felt pretty horrible. I mean, I know people who lost their families. I know people lost their homes. And now we said, okay, what are we going to do about it? How can we create an opportunity mindset to be able to actually make something good out of this?
Amazing. And again, we'll share links to that and everything else Mark Munchak talked about today in the show notes at drrichardschuster.com. Mark, our time has flown by. I knew it would. It did last time. And it's always great to speak to you. You're doing amazing things in the world. As you know, I wrap up every episode by asking my guests just this one question. What is your biggest helping, that one most important takeaway you'd like somebody to walk away with after hearing our conversation today?
Well, there are many, but I'm going to stick to one. I'm going to play by your request. Ask for help when you need it. And understand that asking for help is also a gift to someone who will give you help. Because number one, they're going to feel that they did a good thing. Number two, they're going to be able to ask for help from you when they need it. And then we're creating what's called in the Jewish mystical tradition, tikkun olam, where one act, one mitzvah, one gift will bring the world back together. And the only way you'll get is to ask and to offer. That's my one daily helping.
Beautifully said. Mark, if somebody's just in front of their computer right now and has to jump in right now, give us a URL, give us a website where people can learn more about you and all you're doing.
Oplab.com, real simple, OPPLAB.com. That is our company website. You can go to Mark Munchak on LinkedIn. You can see all of my information there. And then you can go to Unconference NYC, which is the website for the Unconference that we just talked about.
Perfect. And again, we'll have everything in the show notes. We got y'all covered if you're in the car. Man, what a great conversation. Mark, thanks so much for joining us today. It was fantastic.
Oh, man. Thank you, Dr. Richard.
Absolutely. And to those of you at home listening to this, took time out of your day, I appreciate you too. If you like what you heard, if you're inspired, if you're going to go check these things out and make a difference, go give us a follow and a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice, because this is what helps other people find the show. But most importantly, go out there today and do something nice for somebody else, even if you don't know who they are, and post it in your feeds using the hashtag #MyDailyHelping, because the happiest people are those that help others.